From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
All too many headlines in the science sections lately speak of trees in trouble, of various forest pests and other pressures that are imperiling these precious living resources. I wanted to get a status update on some of the most talked about current issues, including emerald ash borer, and also some sense of whether we gardeners and homeowners can play any role in shifting the balance of things toward the more positive column. Today's guest, Dr. Murphy Westwood, directs the Global Tree Conservation Program at Morton Arboretum in Lisle, Illinois. The program strives to save threatened trees from extinction through collaborations with botanical gardens, universities, and others in China, Europe, and Mexico, as well as throughout the U.S. She has a particular interest in oaks, which we'll also talk about, and I welcome Dr. Murphy Westwood to A Way to Garden. It's so nice to have you and to speak to someone from the very famous Morton Arboretum.
Thank you very much for having me.
Speaking of which, before we get started on trees in trouble, I believe I read that in, I guess it was 2015, the Morton had its first million annual visitor tally. Is that correct?
And
tell
us
a little bit about the place.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's a 1,700-acre public garden in the western suburbs outside of Chicago. We have over 4,500 different species of trees and woody plants on display here. About half of the collection is more kind of formal collections, formal gardens. There's a hedge garden and children's garden that's very popular. And the other half of it is restored natural areas, so a really excellent woodland and a prairie restoration that's been going on for probably about 50 years now. So there's a little bit for everybody here. It's a fantastic place to visit.
I think it was founded in the 1920s, maybe?
That's right, 1922.
Yeah.
So we're already thinking about how to celebrate 100 years.
I was thinking that that was coming up before you know it. And so a quick hint also kind of what the Global Tree Conservation Program that you direct, you know, kind of what that's about so that we can have the backdrop of that.
Sure. So we started the Global Tree Conservation Program 3 years ago with a focus on protecting threatened tree species as the unit of conservation. So the Arboretum has a long history of research and conservation effort for forest communities and ecosystems, especially in the Midwest and sort of locally and regionally here. But there's, as you mentioned in your introduction, you know, the news is full of sometimes some bad news stories about how we're losing species diversity around the world, especially in biodiversity hotspots. And botanical gardens and arboreta have an incredibly important role to play in conservation. We have, you know, years and years of expertise in plant identification and collecting, in understanding plants, habitats, biology, anatomy, ecology. So we started our program with the goal of deploying some of our expertise and then leveraging the expertise of the broader global botanical garden community to protect threatened tree species around the world. So we're really focused on a kind of goal of zero tree extinction. And we do that by working with partners. And that can be other gardens and arboreta. It can be NGOs. So we work very closely with a partner organization that's based in the UK called Botanic Gardens Conservation International, which is sort of like our global association or professional network for gardens with a focus on conservation. And then we'll also work more locally with local partners, local NGOs, universities, to conduct research and conservation projects that are sort of tailored to species needs, especially focusing in areas of high biodiversity where there's often less capacity and infrastructure for conservation. So botanical gardens around the world tend to be kind of centered and focused in more urban areas, in more developed countries. There are a lot of botanical gardens in the U.S. and in Europe and in Australia and the Far East.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily overlap with where all of the plant diversity in the world is.
Okay.
So we're just kind of trying to make sure that we're that nothing's falling between the gaps.
Okay. Well, so zero extinctions, okay. Just a modest goal. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's,
kind of,
it's overwhelming.
Lower
but,
the bar.
You know, really, there's no technical reason why any plant species should go extinct. Between things like seed banks and our living collections that we have in botanical gardens, mm-hmm. you know, we should never have a scenario where you can't see this plant anymore on Earth.
Right.
And so, you know, that, you know, obviously that's not ideal. We'd love to have all of these plants healthy
right.
and happy
in
the native
range.
Environment.
Right, right, of course.
So, you know, we're at a minimum, we're aiming at zero extinction. What
okay.
we'd love to ensure is, you know, these things are still functioning and, you know, providing ecosystem services and, you know, playing an important role in the community network and framework in which they exist.
So to shift then to one that is in the headlines a lot lately, and who knows what's going to happen with it, because it sounds like it's really in trouble, the ash, the American ash, and other ash species as well, or how many ashes?
Yeah, so we recently completed threat assessments for the International Union for Conservation of Nature, the IUCN. They administer and run a program called the Red List, mm-hmm. which is a list of threatened species. It's basically the international gold standard for evaluating the extinction risk of plant and animal species. And we completed six threat assessments for the six native U.S. ash species
okay.
that are eastern U.S. The point being that these are the species centered around, their distributions are centered around where the emerald ash borer was originally introduced around Detroit in the late 1990s. And these are the species that are currently being just decimated by the explosion of the emerald ash borer population here in the U.S. So we have evaluated six, but there are many other ash species, you know, in the western U.S. and around the world. We're also working to complete those assessments as well. But I focused initially on the eastern U.S.
Okay.
because of the urgency.
Right. And I see on the interactive map, I think it's from the USDA's Cooperative Emerald Ash Borer Project. They have like this, well, you know the map that I'm talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an excellent resource.
Yeah. And it's updated. So it tells you what date you're looking at, the last,
mm-hmm.
you know, tally. And it shows you within counties where the first report was or whatever. And then it shows areas that are under quarantine. And I saw that, you know, it has crept into Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas. This is emerald ash borer that we're talking about. Nebraska and even Colorado. There's an isolated little area in Colorado that's been marked on the map. So,
that's right.
And is it going? Is this a problem just in North America, or is this elsewhere in the world as well?
So, emerald. So the ash borer itself is native to Asia
mm-hmm.
and Eastern Asia mainly. So China and bits of Russia, and it has. So it's been introduced here. In North America, there's also reports of it in, I think, around Moscow. So, like in western and farther west in Russia. And, you know, if that is the case and if it's, you know, if it is reproducing there and happy there, it's probably just a matter of time before it works its way into Europe.
I see. And when you say introduced here, meaning North mm-hmm. America, you know, last year I did an interview with Dr. Gary Lovett at the Cary Institute in New York State,
mm-hmm.
and we talked about how that happens, you know, methods like wooden packing materials from abroad and so forth that may carry some of these imported, inadvertently imported forest pests. And so I'll link people to that if they want to know a little bit more of, like, how did this happen. But so from where we are now, we have a big problem, not just because it's moved into so many areas, but it's a very voracious pest. I mean, what is it about it that makes it so terrifying?
That's right. So it feeds. Basically, the insects will lay their eggs on the bark of ash trees, and then the larvae bury into the vasculature of the tree. So basically, like the circulatory system of the tree, and that's where it feeds and overwinters, and it creates these extensive galleries in the bark of the tree, which then it effectively girdles the tree. So it suffocates it. It can't move nutrients and water around.
Mm-hmm.
And because the larvae are pretty big, and you may have several in any one tree at a time, they can choke off and effectively kill the tree within 3, 4, 5 years very effectively. And the insects are very happy here. They have no natural predators, and so they're breeding like crazy. And if the borer takes hold in a stand of trees, it can wipe out the entire standing stock of mature ash trees, anything really over like an inch in diameter. It will infest and attack, and the trees die within a few years. And it's like 99% to 100% kill rate.
So sometimes we see in our areas, if we live in the east, or actually it's when we say east, we mean sort of east of the Rockies, not even east as in just the east or beginning of the mm-hmm. Midwest. I mean, it's a big
basically
area.
Basically the whole eastern half of the
U.S.
Yeah,
that map is looking like it wants to be the eastern two-thirds of the U.S. Do you know what mm-hmm. I mean? It looks like it wants to push. I mean, it's kind of scary. So how does it happen that an area becomes quarantined? As I said, I noted on the map that there's some of these sort of like areas that are marked off. So I've seen these big traps out in my area where I don't think we yet have reports, but they're kind of, are they like purple or blue, or they're like these big sort of canister things up in the trees, these traps to sort of monitor, to look and see if the pest has been seen locally?
Yes. I mean, there are many different stakeholders who
okay.
are interested in tracking the distribution and spread of the borer. So certainly, you know, the government agencies, the USDA, but states and even municipalities have, you know, like local towns and communities have monitoring efforts in place. Botanical gardens have monitoring efforts in place where they have their eyes out for this. I'm not sure exactly what the process is for the USDA to declare a zone, a quarantine zone,
mm-hmm.
but there are a lot of different players and people that have a vested interest in understanding where this thing is and
okay.
when.
And so I see in articles about the emerald ash borer, you know, quotes not just from scientists such as yourself, but also sometimes from like pest control companies and arborists about injecting or spraying infested trees and sort of implying that there's remedial help possibly. How does that work and what can it really do? You're describing a situation that's widespread, moving fast, and a voracious
mm-hmm.
pest. So what would be... how does that work?
So for a little bit of context,
yeah.
the red list assessment that we did, where we we determined that these ash species are critically endangered because of the emerald ash borer threat, so critically endangered of extinction, that takes into account really only the wild populations.
I see.
Anything cultivated, we don't consider, which actually kind of paints a more bleak picture than it really is because of exactly what you just said. We do have some, you know, ways of treating some of the trees in order for them to not, you know, to not be so severely impacted by the borer. And that's exactly why, you know, in Ash's case, we're hoping it will not go extinct. We will always be able to keep some of these trees alive. And that is definitely something that homeowners can consider. So a lot of communities, a lot of, you know, private homeowners, a lot of landowners, municipalities are treating really, you know, important or valuable street trees. We treat trees here in our collection that are important and valuable in our collection so that they are not overcome by the emerald ash borer. And that is absolutely something that people can do to maintain ash in their landscape. The thing to consider, though, is that is obviously, you know, you have to keep treating, you know, over the years.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a solution for saving ash in terms of them being like a like functional species in our eastern forests. But it is a solution in, you know, although an expensive solution in, you know, communities for homeowners. So if that's something that homeowners have the capacity to do and the passion to do, then that is definitely a good solution.
Okay.
you know, for sort of the short term and keeping in mind that it's not, you know, I mean, it you have to keep that sort of that kind of interference or that that effort in over time.
And are there, you know, breeding efforts or is there anything else being done? I mean, there's a monitoring, as you said, different agencies mm-hmm. and levels of government and nonprofits and whatever counties and states and so forth are watching, and there's quarantines and there's, you know, trying to stem the spread, so to speak. Slow it and contain wherever is possible. And I'm assuming that trees that have been identified as having it are destroyed. And are they then destroyed? I mean, because you don't want to spread it. You don't want to.
Right.
Yeah.
So there are there are some silver linings. You know, we've learned a lot about the spread and monitoring of invasive pests, you know, through this whole process. There's a lot of new and interesting research that's happening about understanding what might be replacing some of these trees in our forests. So what sort of species and what will the plant community look like in the future that where we're filling the gap. You know, in places like Ohio, you might have up to 15 or 20% of the forest is made up of ash. So that's a big gap to fill. So, you know, we're trying to take this as like a learning experience. But there's also some proactive things that are happening. So there are breeding programs. One of the challenges is that a lot of our native ash species are far enough, like, removed and sort of evolved from the common ancestors they share with the Asian species that it's not easy to breed between them. So chestnut is a good example of where American chestnut, which we have a really good breeding program that the American Chestnut Foundation has been doing for decades now with Chinese chestnut to try to breed in resistance to the blight that came and wiped out a lot of our chestnut. This is different because it's actually very hard, in many cases impossible, for these species to breed with their Asian counterparts. So that is challenging. We are trying to understand some of the underlying mechanisms of why the Asian species are more resistant to the borer, but that is not, that's a slow, that sort of genetic work is kind of a slow and long process.
Okay.
What is happening is, you know, some researchers, the Forest Service and some universities like Notre Dame are doing some research on what we call lingering ash, which are trees in our regular forest matrix that, for whatever reason, appear to be surviving and living a little bit longer and looking healthier than everything else around them, which dies very quickly. So, you know, those are being identified, and something else that people can do if they find they're walking through the forest and they see an ash that's mature and healthy and all the other ash are dead in the eastern U.S., in, you know, in an area where it's there's been a long infestation of EAB, you know, call me or email, you know.
1-800-MURPHY.
The U.S. Forest Service would love to hear about that.
Yes, okay.
So there are some lingering ash. So we like that, and that is essentially us trying to use our own, you know, U.S. species, their own inherent genetic variability to see if somebody, if one of them happens to have, you know, some tricks up its sleeve, some natural genetic variation that makes it more resistant than its neighbors. So and then there's also they're releasing some parasitoid wasps, I believe.
I wondered about biological controls. Yes. Okay.
So there's some research being done for biological controls, too.
Okay.
So we'll have to see how that goes.
All right. So sort of shifting gears in our last 5 minutes or so to a different issue. I believe oaks are a signature species of the Morton Arboretum. And I was surprised this fall to read about a red list. You spoke about the red list for the ash. But a red list of United States oaks being published that there's, you know, some that have not such good conservation status, some of our native species. And oaks are, you just described a couple minutes ago about how the ashes in your region are a large amount of the forest, meaning it's a keystone species. Would that be the correct expression?
Mm-hmm.
And oaks are often a keystone species, aren't they, in their forests?
Exactly.
So can you just sort of say these are really important trees? It's not just an insignificant species, right?
Yeah. So we actually looked at all 91 native U.S. oak species.
Oh.
and compiled the red list assessment, so the threat assessment for all 91 of the oaks as well as these six eastern ash species. And for the oaks, which, you know, I think a lot of, I mean, I guess it's the case for the ash too, but I think it can be very easy to take some of these keystone species for granted, you know, because they are so common that, you know, you see them everywhere, you sort of think, oh, they'll be here forever, and it's not necessarily the case. So there are about a quarter of our U.S. oak species are threatened with extinction. So in one of the sort of three threat categories that the IUCN defines, as well as near threatened, which is sort of a category just before that, the threat categories that says, you know, if trends keep continuing, then this thing could sort of creep above these thresholds and become a threatened species. Mm-hmm. And the oak story is interesting because with ash, there's such an obvious front-runner threat, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's for all the species, and it's all the same thing, and it's very easy to identify. With oaks, that's not necessarily the case. So we looked at our native oak species, which are, you know, and oaks are pretty much distributed across the entire U.S. I think Idaho is the only species that doesn't have native oaks, and is the only state without native oaks. And our oak richness is really highest. The species richness is highest in the eastern U.S. and throughout the southern U.S. and then along the west coast. And our threatened species also kind of follow that general area. So the southeastern U.S., Texas, Arizona, California, our threatened species are kind of distributed across the entire country.
I saw that on the map in the report. It was kind of shocking how many of those were in trouble.
And there's no, there's really no one front runner threat. So, you know, habitat shifting, fire and fire suppression, so changing fire regimes, farming, ranching, climate change,
I knew you were going to say
urban
climate
development,
change.
All of these things play a role.
I knew that the word climate, the phrase climate change had to come up because it seems like the straw that breaks the camel's back. And I mean, it's such a, mm-hmm. a factor that is influencing so many species.
It is. Yeah. And we're especially worried about climate change with trees because trees are so long-lived. You know, they're stuck, I mean, like all plants, they're stuck where they are. But, you know, their life cycle is so slow that they, you know, populations and species can't shift their ranges nearly as quickly as, you know, fast-growing or, you know, annual plants or animals, for example, where they can, you know, kind of get up and move around. So we're especially worried about trees and climate change in the U.S.
So we just have 1 minute left, and is there another thing that you're really focused on right now in your work? Anything else on the sort of front burner besides these two things we've been speaking about?
Yeah. So these red list efforts are part of a broader effort we have to evaluate the threat level for oaks across the entire world.
Oh.
So that's and that's about 450 species. So we're really only just a quarter of the way there. And, you know, we anticipate actually the picture to be a little bit worse because the two oak centers of diversity are in Mexico and in Southeast Asia. And those are, so that's where there are the most species, the highest species richness. So we are working now on Mexico and Central America and looking at oaks there. And we've got some other, you know, you can't just stop with doing the threat evaluation. You have to then move forward and say, now that I know what to prioritize, now that I know what's threatened, what am I going to do about it?
Oh.
And that is kind of the happy side of my job, which is, you know, we have projects on the ground targeting some of these species. So we're out collecting acorns. We're growing them in botanical gardens. We're conducting research to understand why some of these species aren't regenerating in the wild. And that's really the more kind of positive note, is that can have an impact and try to reverse some of these trends.
Well, thank you for ending us on an up note in a tough, very, very important work. Dr. Murphy Westwood from the Global Tree Conservation Program at the Morton Arboretum in Illinois. Thank you for making time to speak to me today.
Absolutely. I'm more than happy to share the story with interested listeners.
And thanks to all the rest of you for listening, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or facebook.com/awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.